All right, welcome everyone at Revolution Radio, and welcome everyone at Truth Broadcast Network. I'm Stephen Roberts. This is the Sunday Afternoons Cancel the Cabal on Revolution Radio and Truth Broadcast Network. Welcome everyone. I'm a little bit weary today. I have a lot of late nights, as a lot of us do. I got a little nap there, but I'm still a little weary or leery, whatever you want to call it. Today's guest is absolutely fascinating man. I found out about him back last year, in like August or September. I hit him up as a Facebook friend and never contacted him. Somebody told me to contact him because he's a great researcher, fascinating man, and I just never did. I just kept putting it off, and kept wondering about him, and finally, about a week and a half ago, I sent him a message, and I actually responded to a post on his one of his Facebook posts, and I popped right in the instant message there, and he popped right back, and we started a little dialogue back and forth, and he was curious about my show, and I was really curious about him, and we just started talking back and forth, and finally connected on Skype and set up a date, and anyways, make a long story short, my special guest today is Franz Glaus. Welcome to the show, Franz.
Thank you, Stephen. Great to be here.
Yes, I know we talked about a myriad of subjects we were going to talk about, but did we ever settle on one or two or three of them?
Yeah. I think the
history of a religion, maybe. I know that.
I think that
might have been one of them.
Of not being able to settle on a topic goes to the whole central
extensive
idea.
Yeah, or
why we would even have this conversation, which is making sense of it, having a whole picture, because you can run here and there and observe what's going on here and observe what's going on there. And if you forget about who's doing the observation, you're going to lose it all. You're going to lose the purpose for going here and there. So I think to me, the purpose for having a conversation like this when you're on a show called Cancel the Cabal is to figure out how you're going to do that effectively. What do you really mean by that? Who's doing the canceling? Who is the cabal? Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Absolutely. And I'm getting a little bit of an echo there, but I did originally pick cancel because, well, if you say anything like kill or anything like that, you get visits from nice federal agents in black suits and assault rifles. So I just put cancel on there.
Yep. And I think it's a great subject. Who's doing the canceling and who is the cabal and what does the cabal tell us? I mean, what does the existence of the cabal actually tell us? You know, how do we get to the point where we've defined the enemy clearly enough that we can cancel it? And, I think it's very unclear. You see it, of course, in everyone's struggle to fight this cabal, to fight this encroaching evil upon the country, upon the family, upon the individual. You know, everybody just wants to be free, to be left alone. But do they really? If you ask somebody, they would tell you, sure, that's what I want. But
what are they willing to do about it?
Well, do they even know what it means to be free? They may not have a clear definition of that in their own mind. And in fact, a lot of people I'm surrounded by in this community think they're pretty well free, and yet they're in a prison. I see it as a prison because it's the freedom that I've defined goes beyond just being able to go down to the store and buy something or you know, drawing a paycheck from some employer that I've sort of settled on, or, you know, going to church on Sunday for a feel-good session, to come back home and just sort of plop myself down in front of the TV to watch another football game, or I guess this time of year it's a basketball game, maybe a hockey game. So, I mean, we all have our choices to make. If we don't see the dangers that some of us see, if some of us don't see those dangers that some of us see, is it because we really don't care whether or not we're really free or not? I mean, what does it mean to be experiencing life on planet Earth? A lot of people ask themselves that. I mean, I think it's kind of a common question, but how far do people take it? I mean, how far do they let that question take them into reality? Because it could be argued that we don't live in reality. A lot of us, most of us. In fact, the Hindus consider, you know, an incarnation in the physical plane of Earth's existence, the lifetime most of us have, as Maya, which translates to illusion. So that's a good question, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely it is. Yeah, I did a show at midnight last night on one of my networks, and I had I actually had two people on, and then we picked up two callers, and then we had a similar discussion. And science doesn't really know what holds atoms together. I believe it's somewhere in the vicinity of 99.7% of the atom is nothing but free and open space, and they don't really know. They can't figure out what holds the atom together.
Right.
And it begs the question: are we living in some sort of a computer programmed matrix where a vibration of sorts is holding the atom together?
Right. Absolutely. And quantum physics has got to be one of my favorite places of study, because it's pushing the boundaries of what our consensus reality might be. Obviously, when everyone thought the Earth was flat, that was a consensus reality, and it got pushed by those able to observe beyond that matrix. But we're now observing, you know, we're now taking steps to observe the warp and woof of the universe, the cosmos, in a way we've never done it. And of course, we'll look back, and things are accelerating so fast. 5 years from now, we'll look back and realize how much we've gone, how far we've gone, and we're leaping centuries ahead in just a few years now. But that's because we're going through the eye of the needle, right? We're going from one part of the grand cycles within cycles cycle into another part of it. And what it just so happens that there are many cycles confluencing at this time in a kind of a singularity that so many speak about, that is something that science can actually point us to, or help define, or help us understand even through the scientific method. And what is the scientific method? I think it's just the exoteric versus the esoteric. There's an, you know, we've all recognized that we have an inner life as well as an outer life. Modern Western civilization tends to emphasize the outer life and the things around us that we can touch and feel. But in the Eastern traditions, although they've, of course, become influenced greatly by the Western civilization, still in their traditions, in the Eastern nations, they've had more recognition of the inner life. That's why, for example, in some communities in India, they celebrate the transition of life to death. They have a party. So we, on the other hand, look at it as a great loss. And sure, I mean, one can mourn the passing of a close loved one. You have to do that because they are going away from you in your current reality. But when you truly have a deeper understanding of what life is, and the inner and outer dimensions of it, you can celebrate the next the ritual of transition, which brings us so much more experience than just the the consensus reality to which we're all sometimes tethered, chained. And the ones that control that reality want us to stay that way. So that's the cabal. And define it how you will. There's somebody I listened to on YouTube calling it the consortium or consortium of course, corporate entities. But of course, that's their outer manifestation. What they are behind the scenes is, you know, on another level, in another dimension, is something that takes a certain determination to define and identify and come to terms with. I think those who determine that they're going to make the greatest progress in this life are going to come to the point of understanding they have to tackle this force, this sinister force that is anti-life, anti-Christ, anti-Buddha, anti-you name it. It's anti-life. It's a controlling psychopathic force. But I don't think, just like Luke Skywalker in Star Wars came to that understanding that Yoda helped him come to, Yoda representing that masterful being that so many would call the guru, the teacher, you know, how about the Christ, how about the Buddha, whatever. Yoda told Luke that if he was to hate Darth Vader, he would in fact be hating himself. Because hatred only engenders self-destruction. It only brings back upon oneself that which one hates. So it's like connecting yourself. You can do it through hatred. You can do it through love. It's your choice. But you connect yourself with that which you hate or which you love. Love is just a natural way of us all being unified or in oneness with the source. But hatred is a way to get connected on a different way. And that way is the way of death and destruction. So it's the inverse of love. And so within ourselves is this warring in the members that Jesus talked about that taught us the warring in the members. And so we see the outpicturing and that's the way life works, right? Life is to teach us what we have to master in ourselves before we can be the co-creators we're meant to be. And we're co-creators whether we know it or not. But what is it exactly that we are creating? How much license are we given to create? I think that's going to depend on what we've chosen to be. Just exactly how creative rather than destructive we've chosen to be. So when you tackle these issues of the day, the cabal and the cartel, the consortium, they're fallen ones, right? They're fallen angels that have come to Earth to rape it of its resources. But how did they even have access to this home we call Earth, some call Terra? How did they have access to that? How did they penetrate the Garden of Eden? How did the lie get spoken and believed by Eve and Adam, right? These are all allegories, metaphors, but really, really salient to every discussion. Every single point of observation in our world goes back to that conversation the serpent had with Eve. So it's a really interesting thing to me. It's like when we can boil it down to the fundamentals, then everything can come into place. And it's not like you're here to answer every question, but you're here to be in the moment enough that the questions aren't going to do anything but allow you to expand your narrow room.
Oh, yes, exactly. I'd like to digress just a little bit here for a second and make a comment on something you said a couple minutes ago, Franz. Scientifically proven that hatred and anger only destroys cells. It destroys organs at the inner core, you know. It doesn't do the body any good at all. It doesn't do the soul or the spirit any good at all to have anger and hatred towards anything. And the cabal knows this at their highest ranks. And so this is why we have such a division in races and countries and tribalism, if you will, you know, at the highest ranks in the media, in the government, in just every social structure that there is on the planet.
Right. Yeah. The tempter comes with the presentation of duality to the individual, going back to what the serpent did with Eve, it's like setting up a duality. It's saying, why wouldn't you want to have access to the infinite knowledge that I have access to? I can give it to you. Well, if Eve is not ready as an initiate in her own evolution, and Adam too, why would you give them something that might prevent them from having the proper evolution, right? You don't introduce something to somebody you're teaching, let's say a piano player, a child of 5 years old who's running their scales on a piano. You don't introduce them with a piece by Chopin and say, hey, if you don't get this down by next week, you know, you're not going to be my student anymore. So serpent introduced a duality in the world of Adam and Eve, allegorically here, and that is what would create a separation, a sense of separation in them. Before that, there was no sense of separation. And that's the whole meaning of appearing naked in the garden. I mean, they did not have the sense of nakedness until that sense of separation was introduced. So when we ourselves point the finger to the sources of our misery and demise, we are, of course, drawing a distinction and a sense of separation between ourselves and that what brings our misery. Now, it's true we live in the planes of duality. So to a practical degree, we have to honor that matrix we're in, that prison plan. We have to go by its rules to the degree that it buys us some more time to define ourselves in the infinite way. And that is what we really are in reality, is we're divine, we're infinite, we have eternal life, there's no end to what we can do, our creative potential. You know, all the great religions teach this at their core. I interact with a lot of people who have problems with religion to begin with, just religion as a concept. And all religion is man's expression of getting back to a source. So, you know, leave aside the semantics of it. Let's not call it a religion. Let's call it a way back to source. People have a hard time with the idea of God. So we can't use God anymore because it's so, you know, charged with religious meaning. So, you know, but if you look at the source, the source meaning of the word religious, religio, to bind oneself to the source, God, the creator, all it means is we're becoming more real about who we are. So it's true that science makes it increasingly clear that everything in the matter universe is connected in an incredibly binded way. I mean, we're so bound together, it's unreal. And science continues to discover this. And this goes beyond the physical rules, the laws of physics, so far beyond the laws of physics. They're constantly being stretched. But why wouldn't they be? Since, you know, we're evolving. And I think of more of the sense of evolving as a spiritual being with spiritual understanding. But what does it mean to be spiritual? I mean, is the material so much different than the spiritual? It really isn't. There's another point where we have duality. So, you know, in practical ways, and, you know, when we're talking about canceling the cabal, in practical ways, we can cancel the part of our existence that is not conducive to our growth. We can cancel that with a choice we make to choose what's expansive, what allows us to grow, to choose love, not hatred, to choose life, not death, to choose freedom, not bondage. And so in many, many ways, if you boil down to the fundamentals, then you can look at the little things in life, you know, the things that affect you, paying taxes, the police state growing around us, the police departments hiring, you know, screening for those who were damaged in the campaigns, the false campaigns we had in Iraq and Afghanistan, taking those guys who were damaged over there. And some of those guys were over there just to kick butt and kill people. And so those are the ones they're recruiting for. Now, what kind of police department that's committed to protecting and serving the community is going to want to do that? There's something else at play here, isn't there?
Oh, yes. And they're also choosing to take less intelligent people, too.
Mm-hmm. I guess I read a story, you probably read it, too, where they don't want your IQ. They don't want your IQ to be too high because you'll question their authority. You'll question your orders. You'll question your training, which a lot of it's coming from the IDF. And if people study what's going on there with the IDF and the wedge state of Israel is what I call it. It's a wedge state, a created state of the globalists. And of course, what's come out of that state is a whole lot of trouble. And even a lot of Israelis themselves are waking up to this and, you know, challenging, not a huge movement yet, but we've seen people from Israel get on YouTube and speak their minds. Even people, even young people who are
even
in
the
families.
Even the American Jews. Some over in New York and that. I think even Florida too, but,
right.
Yeah. But they also, well, that's probably, I would imagine anyways, that's probably the big reason why they stopped teaching the trivium and the quadrivium in schools long ago, because they didn't really want students to be intelligent. They just wanted, as George Carlin says, they want people just smart enough to run the machinery and stack the papers to support the system.
Yeah. And you know, you create people like that when you inundate them with information that they're not prepared to have. And you do it in a way where you present that information the way you want it presented. So it all comes down to the individual having a sense of the order of things and having a stillness within themselves that will allow them to discern that which is order versus the chaos. And sometimes through a chaotic experience, one can come to a very stark appreciation of the order of things. So it's not to say that having chaos in your life should never happen, but it will happen until you've ordered your life. And so each individual has to do that for themselves. But there comes a time, you know, you can go 40 days in the wilderness, you know, and get in touch with that inner sense, and then come back, and you're very well likely going to be faced with some emergencies at some point where you're going to have to take what you've gained from that and apply it, and sometimes in an urgent way. It doesn't mean you're going to lose your center. It doesn't mean you're going to lose your balance, but it means you're now going to have to act with what you know. And you see the people who have the best voices right now in our world are those who, you know, have long worked on themselves. And this doesn't happen in one lifetime. You know, I'm of the understanding that we get a lot of cracks at this. The schoolroom is, you know, called Earth is, it's very broad in its scope. It teaches a lot. The soul has to learn a lot. And I don't know, even in the Bible, you know, we read of the ancient forefathers having lifetimes that went a lifetime that went many hundreds of years even. We don't have those hundreds of years in these lifetimes. We've had to have that curtailed, due to a misuse of the law. And so the law is merciful. It keeps you from killing yourself or from absolutely destroying yourself. But I mean, it only does so to the degree that you are true to the law, because eventually it is possible to completely annihilate yourself. And I think a lot of these cabal type figures are the ones who've had a long, long time. They have a huge momentum on doing what they do. And there comes a point where they run out of opportunity to do that. And we should all be very hopeful about that, that it all comes to an end for them before too long, sooner or later. I mean, they've had plenty of chances to get it right. So, I mean, let that be a lesson to us all, but it's not from fear that we gain our biggest gains. I think it's from what the Bible says is fear. You know, the use of the word fear in the Bible has a very deep meaning. I think it's more, it touches on really a sense of honor, honoring the reality of the source of where we come from. When you honor that reality and those laws, you come into a fearfulness of that reality, because you understand that going outside of that reality will only have its consequences, and those consequences are there to teach you. So it's almost like the aspirant that gets to the highest point of experience on this planet is the one that's truly been able to combine the good, the bad, and the ugly, and laugh about it and act on it in a meaningful way, in a purposeful way. So I'm talking in real generalities, but we can boil it down to any of the situations we face today. We can look at any of the issues. And one of my issues, or the issues I find most important right now, is the issue of radioactive poisoning of this planet. And Fukushima has put the exclamation point on that, although this poisoning has been going on for decades, since the 40s. But Fukushima puts the exclamation point on it. And if we're not careful, there'll be some other exclamation points to come, because those GE Mark I reactors are on fault lines all over the world. 23 of them here in the United States. And I watched a video this morning that suggests that of course, we know the weather's being manipulated, but the flooding that took place in 2010 or 11 caused a breach at one of our reactors in the Midwest is just part of the warfare against the human race of the psychopaths, you know, the cabal. And so we look at all the different ways they can do this, where they can cancel life, and we have to cancel them because they want to cancel us. But we have to cancel them the right way. We have to cancel them within ourselves before we even have a hope of canceling them without ourselves. And yet at the same time, that inner mindfulness that the Buddhists teach about has to be matched with the response to the emergency, because we are in an emergency. The Fukushima radiation is circling the globe, and the most dangerous part of it is the particulates, not so much the background radiation, not so much, you know, being able, what you pick up on your Geiger counter, but the particulates you're not going to pick up, the ones that are in suspension in the air and the water and are working through the accumulation in the biosphere, in biological life. And as it works its way up the food chain, becomes bioaccumulated, then we eat it, and all of a sudden it's in our gut. Although Chris Busby did say that our guts are especially well equipped to be able to process that kind of thing and flush it out, still, you don't want to be taking in plutonium isotopes. You don't want to be taking in uranium isotopes. But the worst is when they're inhaled and they get rained down on us, and people are ignoring what's going on with Fukushima. Fukushima is like it's the dark sheep. It's the black sheep of any issue, even among those in the community of alternative media, if you will, those exposing the truth of the cabal. Don't bring up Fukushima, because what do we do about that? It's like, that's an impossible task to take on. So why don't we just ignore it? What are your thoughts, Stephen, about the Fukushima disaster?
Well, I hear it characterized as a tragedy, as a disaster. But I've been characterizing it for 3 years now as a travesty, more so than a disaster or tragedy, Franz, because, well, let's look back to 1986 when Chernobyl melted down in the outer reaches of Russia. They acted very, very quickly. They enshrouded Chernobyl with, concrete and other, materials. I mean, certainly Chernobyl is still leaking radioactivity, but not like it was at the beginning of the disaster there. Even the communists did something quickly. And the Japanese and all of the other countries in Europe and America here are twiddling their thumbs and worrying about what Justin Bieber is doing or Kim Kardashian. That's how I boil it down, is what seems to be important.
Well, even those who wouldn't be distracted by the mindless stuff of the Hollywood gossip pages are also distracted by so many other issues. And you know, it might be unfair to call it being distracted when they are issues that present such an urgency. I mean, if World War III was to be unleashed, we can't let that happen. We've got to expose the false flags as they're being planned, as they're being leaked. If we don't, and, you know, nuclear bombs rain on American cities, or even just one in Manhattan, like Obama threatened, which, you know, people don't recognize that as a threat when they see him make that statement in the media.
It was a thinly veiled threat. And also to add to that, that nuclear plant just outside Manhattan there is very, very suspect on leaking itself right now. And they actually believe that that's going to be the next one to go if there's any kind of a little fracture in the plates over in that area.
You know, and I have to thank Dana Durnford for really focusing me on that very point, that the nuclear power industry is a cover for a nuclear weapon development program that's been going on for 70 plus years in this country and the world in general. But obviously, it's not run by anybody that represents the people in this country or their nation. It's run by this international globalist cartel that has taken over the nations through their debt system and through their mercantilist admiralty law system, which is now the modern incarnation of what was the fascist system in Rome, and before that in Babylon, and going back to Sumer. I mean, these fallen angels go back thousands of years in their influence, but it boils down to a very real mechanism that they have put into place now over centuries that we are currently having to bear the yoke of. And nuclear power or nuclear weaponry is a big ace in their, a big trump card for them. They use it to develop more and more exotic directed energy weapons. They use it to, in their desperation, to put us under a great burden, all of us in humanity, who would be having to fight off that which burdens our bodies greatly. If you're trying to live a life, a healthy life, and with a clear mind, so you can discern what you need to discern as you get older and as you make progress in this life, how can you do it if your body's fighting off nuclear radiation poisoning? Very difficult to do. Of course, miracles abound. We can transcend the physical form. I don't want to make it doom and gloom that we're covered with this radiation poisoning, but for the average person, humanity, and cancer is off the chart, and all the other diseases that, you know, cancer would be more off the chart if other diseases weren't taking people out of the picture before they get cancer. They're all on the way to getting cancer, but they're dying of a heart attack first, or diabetes, or you name it. So all diseases are off the chart, but they're all pretext to cancer, because cancer is the ultimate form of self-annihilation in the physical form. And nobody is, by their own choice, ingesting nuclear particles. These have all been introduced in our environment against our will. It's of course become the idea that we need nuclear energy as a way to get us away from, you know, the burning of fossil fuels is a clever lie. That's not so clever anymore, but it seems a lot of people ascribe to that lie. So I think that when we look at that issue of radiological poisoning, we can see that there's an urgency now. We can't just sit on a mountaintop and become enlightened and think that we're actually acting responsibly. We now have to do that. We now have to put into action any self-reflection we may have done. And we have to have those periods of self-reflection in a far more accelerated way so that we can act effectively on this very real problem. Some are calling it an extinction event, a life extinction event on this planet. I don't think they should be dismissed who say this. I don't think they should be dismissed as being alarmist, because if you really study the nuclear radiation issue, you find out just how nefarious and sinister it is, just how destructive it is, and just how underreported, undercovered it is. And I think it just blows the whole Pandora's box of the big lie matrix that we're in on this planet more than any other issue, because of how much it's been covered up by politicians, by the media, by industry, by academia, by science. Everyone, you can see the cover up in every arena. People speaking up about it I've actually observed Chris Busby having a back off, because a year ago he was forcefully talking about it. And this last time he was on InfoWars, he was like, oh, I don't really know what's going on there. It's almost like you could tell that Chris Busby was told to get on that show and start to introduce doubt into what he had been saying before, or else, as you well know, or else.
Yes, exactly. Or else, you know, we're not going to treat you next time. Or else, gee, you have a nice looking, granddaughter there, Chris. But, anyways, I guess it begs the question, Franz, is the, nuclear industry, is that the, well, especially the plants being put on fault lines all over the world, is that the global elitists or the cabals, is that their WMDs? Is that their weapon of mass destruction?
Absolutely. And behind that is their ability to create floods where they want so that those plants could get flooded and destroyed and melt down. Tidal waves, they can do anytime. Now, I'm not saying that their efforts can't be countermanded. I think there are forces at work in the earth to protect mankind that people don't know about, generally speaking. So they're not completely at liberty to do what they want with their technology, with their apparently far vastly superior technology. I think there are technologies at work, or forces at work on behalf of mankind, who have even greater technologies. And I'm not talking about alien races who are going to save mankind. I'm talking about those who can be invoked from a higher dimension to assist. I suppose we could call that heaven. People, of course, who, you know, the mention of heaven in any religious terms would have trouble with that. But I'm going to call it heaven because that's what a lot of us have grown up understanding. There's a heaven world. We come from heaven and we go back to heaven. Well, what is that exactly? Well, science tells us that there are many dimensions of reality, that light itself is only seen through our eyes in a very narrow band of its entire scope. So how could it be so hard to understand that there's a heaven world and heavens within heavens? You know, in the Bible, my father's house has many mansions. So having said that, they are not all powerful. In fact, they are a paper tiger, because they operate in a very narrow dimension of reality. But when they can come to us who are sort of going through our schoolroom paces, going through the early years, the elementary years of our soul evolution, they can come to us and they've been through that, and for whatever reason, they've decided to become parasites and predators rather than mentors, right? So those who come with this predatory consciousness, but they're at a higher evolution than we are, let's say, or came or fell from a higher point of evolution, they have certain access to certain laws of physics and beyond laws of physics that we don't have access to yet and can use those against us. And so it may look hopeless to those of us who are outgunned. But you know what? History is replete with examples of the outgunned outgunning the gunners. It happens all the time. And that's what we're facing, is a great test of faith in our inner reality, in our superior reality, which is so far superior from those who would use nuclear radiation to destroy this planet. You know, it wouldn't surprise me if in the twinkling of an eye, we discovered a way to neutralize radiation. We haven't done that yet, and we shouldn't take that for granted because it's awfully destructive. But, you know, I've heard of zeolite. I've heard of other things. How do you neutralize man-made, you know, fission-produced man-made isopes? There isn't anything solid I've seen, but I've heard a lot of people talk about how it's possible to neutralize them in your own life, in your own body, and you can find a way to clean those out and neutralize them. And I'm just getting started on that for me and my family. But as a planet, are we able to, I mean, just think about all of the life that's dying in the Pacific Ocean. You have to be just ignoring that story not to see what's going on. Now, can life rebound quickly if we're able, you know, to stop that progress of polluting the Pacific and then the other oceans? I believe Earth is able to recover from just about anything. But, you know, Lauren Murray really, really defines it well when she says that these man-made isotopes are the stuff that only occurs when a star, a star explodes, and the Earth has never experienced anything like this until it was created by man through the splitting of the atom. So what she's saying is that our biosphere is not designed to handle these radioactive isotopes created through the fissioning process, and that's a warning.
Oh yes, absolutely it is. Sorry, I had my microphone muted there. Yeah, I was just getting into that. It is a warning. It is a warning that's being ignored by especially the American media, but some of the world's media, they are covering it, but you know, until it becomes a nightly or even a weekly issue, I think people are still going to continue to ignore the pink elephant in the middle of the room, Franz.
The consequence to ignoring it is dying a slow, painful death of cancer. I'm trying to remember the gentleman's name. I heard one of his talks for the first time in the last day or two, and he talks about being having leukemia, having what he calls AML, advanced something leukemia. And it used to not occur in children, and now it's occurring in the younger and younger ages. He's in Utah, and he's calling that the radiation capital of the world, the cancer capital of the world. It's through the roof, the cancer victims there and the cancer. And that's why they have some of the best cancer treatment facilities on the planet, the most advanced for dealing with things like leukemia, because Utah is downwind from the Nevada test sites, which have created. And, you know, this is the thing people don't understand. Cancer doesn't just happen overnight. It happens over many years of the body fighting off the nucleotides that it ingests. And you can't define what caused your cancer. So it's a well-kept secret. But it's coming out because too many people have it now. And what a way to have to reveal this to the world through all of these people having to suffer the most horrific, horrific suffering that one can suffer. It's just, it boggles the mind that this kind of suffering is going on. And this is, you know, people talk about a coming Armageddon. We're in it. We're in the war of Armageddon. And those who have unleashed this toxicity on the planet are the war of Armageddon. They've become it. Their purpose is to be the war of Armageddon. They've lived it for so long, for eons, that they can't do otherwise. But the only reason their Armageddon is upon us is because of the inner Armageddon, the warring in our members within ourselves. We wouldn't have this happening for us to live through if there wasn't some accountability for it within ourselves. And I'm not trying to take the accountability off of those who should have it, because I totally believe that the criminals who are responsible for their crimes should suffer the consequences of their crime. They should be held. There should be justice. But there is no injustice. Ultimately, they will suffer the consequences, even if it means what's called the final death or the second death. So souls who have been committed and you know, without ever turning back to a course of destruction, eventually have to be destroyed and will be self-destroyed. They do not inherit eternal life because they've turned their back on it. So within ourselves, we have this warring. We have, I mean, if anybody's has read the Screwtape Letters, you can get a great representation of what it's like to have that dialogue within yourself, your real self with your, you know, synthetic self, the little devil sitting on the shoulder, what one could call the dweller on the threshold, what has been called the dweller on the threshold, that says, oh no, you know what? Just have fun with it, Franz. You know, I mean, we're here to have fun. Life is short. Go ahead. You know, take that beer, drink it down, and you have another one, and you can party a little bit. And, you know, it just starts with a little beer here and a little beer there. And before you know it, you've kind of let your guard down and you've done something you didn't want to do. And, oh, well, you know, we're just human. We're just human, you know. Let's go to church on Sunday and then God will forgive us for it. And we can go back to, you know, what it was we were doing just to have fun. And, you know, what I'm saying, it's like the little things add up to the big things. And then before you know it, you're in Armageddon. So this didn't just happen overnight. When you think about the founding of the United States of America, United States with small letters, small letter U and small letter S, right? Versus the corporate capitalized United States Incorporated. That United States of America founded by the founders, these were men who were really grounded, really well grounded in the eternal principles, you know, of the various traditions that go back thousands of years, or traditions of light, not the traditions of darkness. They knew that there was a war between light and darkness on this planet, and they knew that they had an opportunity to start something and establish something that could have an eternal effect on what was going on this planet. And so they charted it. They codified it, but they also borrowed from what had been codified before with the Magna Carta, and before and since. Even the Iroquois had a practice of bringing their nations together that, you know, the founders observed and took great teaching from. Right?
I have to interrupt you for a second here.
Yeah.
We've got the hour break coming up here. We've got we're going to have about a good seven and a half minute break here coming up, and we should be hearing the music here at any time. But, we're going to come back and discuss Fukushima some more. And I have a comment once we come back from the break, and there's the music right there about, you mentioned Utah and Nevada, the nuclear testing grounds. So we'll be right back, everyone. Stay tuned. All right, welcome back from the break, everyone. I don't know what happened there. I signed off for the hour break there, and I took a little break for a minute, and I come back, and I looked at the Skype, and Franz was gone. I just don't know what happened. Maybe somebody's playing little tricks on us. I know this subject is a touchy one with the American government and the Japanese government. They don't like to cover it, so maybe somebody did a little something with the Skype and kicked Franz off, but I had to call him back. But yes, I said I had some comments on, Franz mentioned, the Nevada nuclear testing grounds and, Utah being directly upwind. I recall hearing, back 5 years ago when I started this, researching and started my university, life in, college. And I'll explain a little bit of that to, Franz and the listening audience. That goes right along with my awakening. But, I recall hearing that back in the 40s and 50s, when they were doing all the testing in Nevada out there in the desert, they were also subsequently filming some westerns out there too. A lot of the movie stars in Hollywood would be out there, not in the testing grounds themselves, but outside of the testing grounds. And subsequently in the years after the testing, a lot of these movie stars, John Wayne being one of them, and a lot of the extras, they started coming up with cancer. They weren't really sure what the reason was, and then I believe they pinpointed the origin being the desert in Nevada and Utah, the downwind of the testing grounds. And that's when a lot of film crews and film stars started going over to Italy and filming their westerns over there. That's why they call them spaghetti westerns, because a lot of them things were moved over into Italy in the 70s and pretty much the early 80s when they were just about done with westerns in that. Have you actually heard something like that, Franz?
Absolutely, yeah. And the state of Utah has become cancer central. Kevin Blanch is the gentleman's name who brought this to my attention, and he himself has been suffering through the treatments for his AML, he calls it, which is a very aggressive leukemia. It requires that you have your bone marrow transplanted. He described a process of having to get treated for that that is, you know, more horrific probably than anything one could imagine. I suppose the only worst thing is if somebody's like cutting you up piece by piece and you're dying from that. So I think there are a lot of good people out there who are sensing the urgency of this situation, the nuclear pollution of our globe. And you can't really come to terms with it if you don't have, you know, like a warrior spirit. And we all have this inner warrior that's potentially there, but it only becomes loosed when you've truly come to understand who you really are, what you really are. Which you just can't deal with these kinds of issues from the point of view of being this limited human being in the mechanization concept that we've been indoctrinated in. The public school education teaches us we're an evolved ape. They threw, you know, the cabal threw this mindset at us through public education. It's a dumbing down. It's a condemnation of mankind by those who want to control us, to make us less than we are, to condemn us to an animal-like existence, and to have us believing that we're nothing more than our biological urges, and with a little bit more added in, which can be easily taken care of with Jersey Shore in the next baseball game. So, you know, they programmed into us, the whole dialectic is programmed into us, the whole tribe consciousness, tribe psychology. But that spark that's in us lets us rise to the occasion. And we saw that with JFK as a really great example of how you rise to the occasion, because he came from a family of criminals, you know, the Kennedy clan. I mean, and maybe one could apologize for Joe Sr. Well, he did what he had to do, you know, to bring wealth to his family, which, you know, everything he did was criminal, basically, although he covered it all up with philanthropy and such. But there was probably a spark of, you know, the true nature of his Irish nature in there. It's just that when you came over to America from Ireland, you know, with nothing but the clothes on your back, you had to scrap to make an existence. But out of that came JFK, who was really, you know, put in office by the mob and, you know, was expected to do what a good Catholic would do, and that's to run by the rules and to further the agenda of the New World Order. And he didn't do that. He grew a conscience. And I'm sure he and his dad had some real heated conversations. You know, Jack, listen to me. You've got to do what they're telling you or you're done. Well, Dad, what is me being president for anyway if I don't stand for the people? So that's what he did. And of course, they took his head off. But that spark can exist in anybody. That spark, that conscience, it can come up in anybody. And sure, they've tried real hard to keep that from coming to fore since JFK, real hard. And we just saw glimpses of it with Reagan. I mean, people will argue that Reagan was just sold out from the beginning. I think he was growing a conscience. They shot him and then lobotomized him, right? But since then, I mean, it's been the Bush cartel, the Bush Nazi group, the Fourth Reich in full, you know, with their front men in the office and their administrations. Still, there are a lot of good people throughout the government of the United States and all agencies and all still good people who can blow the whistle, like an Snowden, you know, like a Wayne Mattson who came out of the NSA, the original NSA whistleblower, Wayne Mattson. See, there are the sparks in the fabric that they never count on. They always think that, oh, they actually believe their own lies, that, you know, the man is just to be controlled and can be controlled with their aggressive mechanisms that are for our control, the food, the diet, the television, even their psychotronic extra low frequency waves and extra high frequency waves and all the crap they do to control us. They really do think that they have the control. And if they don't, they figure they can fake it till they make it. That's what I think they think. So they're the cosmic losers. They're the parasites. They don't have a flame of their own. They can't rise to more than their one-upmanship. That's all they do. They do that with each other, which is why they're doomed to failure. Because among them is the Gog versus Magog thing going on. How can they ever succeed? Now, what they can do is succeed in blowing up the planet because they've done it elsewhere. So that's what we have to keep them from doing. Earth happens to be a very important crossroads in our galaxy and systems of worlds. Very important crossroads on Earth. There's lots of planets, but there aren't many like Earth. And we've got to do it right here, but we've got a lot of dispensations in our favor. And it's just a matter of choosing correctly and being more in tune with what's real than what's not real. And actually making that happen pretty quickly at this juncture, because you don't have a whole lot of time to figure this out. If you don't figure it out in the next little bit, you know, 2014 is a magnanimous year. I mean, it's a year of magnanimous proportion. But so was 2013 and so was 2012. We've gone through those. So we'll go through 2014 and we'll make some more choices and we'll get closer to it. And if you follow the timetables, you know, there comes a time where we finally, you know, earned our way out of this prison planet. But, you know, we're in the midst of it now. It's the Armageddon and it's the warring in the members too. And we have to win that war first. But, you know, it's interesting because it can never be one or the other. It's always both together. The outer war and the inner war are being fought together. That's the nature of what we're up against. Just like, to be whole, you have to have your male and your female sides integrated. And males are born with a 60% emphasis on the male side, and females are born with a 60% emphasis on the female side. And the spiritual aspirant, the spiritual master, learns how to integrate the male and female and becomes, in fact, androgynous, perhaps not in the physical sense, but in a spiritual sense, in a sense of consciousness, where the flame of the mother, the intuitive and the nurturing sense, is just as strong, in good balance with the sense of the conqueror, the warrior, the initiator, the creator in the father principle and the male principle. So balancing these two sides is what the Tao teaches, right? If you study the Tao, the Tai Chi, you know, the whole practice of Tai Chi and yoga and all these other practices are to bring these two sides into balance. And of course, we know about the brain having two sides, the left and the right hemisphere. One is more the masculine side, the do it side. The other is the more.
That's just what I was going to comment on.
Yep. It's the right side is the artistic, nurturing, intuitive side. We have to have these in balance if we're going to master our life's initiations. We are going through an education so that we can, when we finish this life, be at a higher rung on the ladder. I mean, you can go backwards too. It's all up to you, but I'd rather not. I'd rather move a step up or two. And then there's those who actually graduate from the schoolroom and they take all these challenges that are before them. And these challenges change with the times, but they're always the same. It's, you know, the Armageddon, the battle of light and darkness, the light of good and evil. And you know, the master of that battle is the one who understands, as Luke came to understand. Luke Skywalker himself, the Jedi Knight becoming, came to understand that I am my enemy. I love my father, and that's how I'm going to win. And he did win. So we are all facing this on so many different levels with so many different incidents, and it's gotten in every single aspect of our life, our children's education, our diet, what water we drink, the air that we breathe, the neighborhood we live in, the people we vote for, supposedly, whether or not our votes actually matter. Just the whole nine yards, man. The art that we enjoy, the music we listen to or play, the dance that we engage in. Is it dance that lifts the spirit, or is it dance that just, I don't know, you know, just indulges?
Sexualizes.
And sexualizes. I mean, and there's nothing wrong with sexuality. We make it dirty so that we make sexuality dirty so it can be corrupted. That's how that works. So, you know, I mean, the duality of male and female is a false duality, but we are one. And the union of male and female to produce offspring is a perfect example of that. Our creativity comes out of the oneness. That wherever we do express oneness is where we create the greatest thing. So if our dance is uplifting the oneness of ourselves with all of life, then that dance is going to create a momentum of light that comes into that room with the participants in that process, right? The audience is the omega, is receiving that flow from the dancer who's in the alpha role at that time, creating and bringing down from higher octaves of light the energy that is needed to lift all those in attendance. And in that, there's a spiral created, a spiral of light created in that room. And it goes up and it takes people's energies up and they leave that event feeling much better. Now, instead, if you have, you know, a dance that expresses the animal nature more, the, you know, the corruption of our true form, the reason we're in embodiment, the reason we are here to create, then it's not going to feel as good. And there are temporary feel goods from doing what's not right. Because you release light. You can raise light and you can release light. And releasing light feels good, but it's a temporary feel good. And that's what we learn. So as we grow older, we go, you know, I don't want to do that anymore because it might feel good for a while, but after, It's like getting high on some narcotic that feels great for a while, but boy, does it let you down hard because you're blowing open your chakras with drugs. That's what's bad about drugs. Sure, they grow naturally in nature, and you know, having the government crack down on people for drugs is the wrong approach. Educating people on why drugs are bad is the right approach, but taking drugs is a good example of what a a temporary feel-good gives you. Alcohol does the same thing. Some people can't socialize without alcohol. They become addicted to the, I guess, the buzz they get, which takes down their shyness, right? Because most people are shy. It's kind of scary to get in with a group of people and have fun and just be yourself. You go in there guarded because you don't know if you're going to get hurt emotionally. So people use alcohol to let down their guard, and they get addicted to that process because it's so much fun. But look what it does to the body. Alcohol destroys your body. It ages you so fast. So though, and then it creates a dependency on something that you don't really want to have. You have everything you need to be who you really are. You have it all. It's all within you. But you've been conditioned to think that you need something from outside of yourself to access that somehow. All that does is imprison you more into the matrix. It's a sop. So getting back to Fukushima, people don't want to know it's happening because it's, you know what? To know that it's actually happening, to actually come to terms with it, that's too much of a leap of accountability, responsibility for most people to take. They're not going to do it. They haven't got any tools to work with. They've not been given those in the false education system, in the lousy parenting they've gotten where the parents think they need to be their kids' friends, or they just need to be cool, or they just need to pay for everything, make sure that they pay for everything, which means they're not at home being their kids' parents. So a lot of our kids are simply not equipped to deal with Fukushima. But in the midst of that, you've got the golden pearls of, these kids that were born into this matrix that just know who they are. They just have this transcendental appreciation, awareness of what they really are. They're in tune with it. Their third eye is open. Somehow it hasn't been, corrupted by all the fluoride and the crap. They somehow managed to have a functioning inner sight, and they know exactly what's going on, and they're able to communicate it in a way that's very effective. And, they embody love and balance and wholeness. These kids are being born all the time. They've been getting born since the 60s, and since. And they're just like, they're the leaven in the loaf. They're the leaven. They're the seeds planted cosmically in the great field of consciousness. And they're growing up, and they're going to lead humanity into a better direction. Now, humanity doesn't have to choose to follow, and it may not. This planet could be destroyed. It doesn't mean I'm going to be destroyed with it. So I think I'll end on that note and let you pose your next question.
Steve. Well, I just had some comments. Maybe we can even expand on that, too. Millions of people have really been conditioned over the last 100 years with the technological advances in media, especially television being the first, and radio was the first, but television came later. People were entranced by TV. I recall hearing Alan Watt up in the Canadian broadcaster one time telling a story when he was a young boy living in the suburb of Toronto, I believe. He said there was a park where on any given day of the week, during the middle of the day, you could go to this park and there would be in upwards of 1,000 people just doing what people do in parks. And the very next week, television came to their town or city. And when television did come, he said you could go to that same park and there wouldn't be 20 people in it.
Yep.
They were just entranced and enthraled. People, millions of people, Americans especially, just believe religiously what is on TV. Yep. If it's on TV, it has to be true.
Yep.
That's their mindset. And, I can bring up a YouTube clip right now of, I think it's Ann Coulter saying that radiation is good for us. We should all go and visit Fukushima, take a vacation there. And I was told by Professor Carl Grossman just a month ago, I had him on, and he said there's an actual psychological term for that. It's called hormesis. There are scientists out there in this world that are telling themselves lies so many telling us lies so many times that they believe their own lie that radiation is good for us, and that term is called hormesis.
No, it's definitely not good for us. You know, nothing can touch us when we're in our light body, so the whole issue would become moot at that point. But the fact is that the biological life on planet Earth is not designed, is not equipped. I touched on that earlier, to take on the man-made, because there is natural occurring radiation. There's also the kind that you mine out of the ground, which actually can be very toxic if you ingest it. So even naturally occurring radiation isn't meant to be eaten. but the man-made stuff is the stuff that has become incredibly dangerous to biological life on Earth, such as it is today in this octave of understanding. And of course, it's part of what the controllers do to control us, is to deceive us in all ways, deceive us on the things that would harm us so that they can control us by that harm, being able to harm us and keep us limited in our awareness of themselves, of their control. Then we're much easier to control. The sheep don't know what the heck's going on when they're corralled. So that's what humanity has become to these. We're just chattel. It's a clever ruse, to say this and that about radiation. I really don't know. I think, you know, their actions betray them. Those who speak such things as Ann Coulter did not long ago and others like her. And other things I've seen her talk about, the type of promotion of the left-right paradigm that she does. She's just one of them. I mean, she might not even have anything. She might not be anything more than just a bot, just like a flesh suit that somebody put in there, and there's nothing there. Just like, you know, Obama. It's obviously devoid of anything real to those who have the eyes to see. And, you know, when you look at the Bush family, all you see is calculated, fraternized evil. So, you know, once your eyes are open, you can see through these voices that seem to hold some authority, but they only hold authority with those who are still sleeping or just don't mind being in the prison or actually love their imprisonment. And it goes, a lot of those people, I don't even know if they've got anything in their past experience to hang on to refer to for what it means to be free. You know, in their whole experience, it's always been this way, and that's the way they define freedom. A sheep thinks they're free as long as they get a little food to chomp on. That's it. That's all that life's really all about, really, for a sheep. So you're right. The deception, I think the important thing to take away from our observations on the vast deception in all arenas on nuclear energy, on nuclear power, is that is a very important factor of control for them. And us figuring that one out is really, really bad for them. And we are figuring it out. So this is another good sign that as the 3%, as the case might be, are on to these things. Because, you know, it took me a while to figure out that they were using nuclear power as a cover for their production of exotic isotopes. it took me a while to figure that out. And I thank Dana Durnford for doing that, and also Lauren Murray and others. And that just helps us to get more whole about our understanding. When you study evil, you learn about what's good as a corollary, don't you?
Yes, you do. Isn't there also another conspiracy out there, Franz, that all this terraforming, all this geoengineering, and all this radiation that's being that's bellowing out all of these nuclear plants, isn't it going to changing the atmosphere, changing the climate of the planet? I know I believe statistically that there is 20% less light getting to the ground right now than what there was 25 years ago. Are they actually changing the climate for a reason?
Yeah, I do believe that we don't know so many of their uses of this technology is stuff we're still discovering. Those of us on this side of the equation, they know what they're doing. Although I think half the time they only think they know what they're doing. I think they're a lot like a bully or a thug who gets a new weapon, and gets all excited about having it so he can be a bigger bully, but doesn't realize that it can hurt him too using that weapon. I think their approach to life, although it's got a level of sophistication that sometimes is something to marvel at, the level of sophistication, but that's only because we're seeing it from our limited viewpoint. In fact, when you take the bigger picture, you see just what spoiled little thugs and brutes they are. And with very little sophistication at all, really, where it counts, they're emotionally stunted, they're spiritually stunted. But yeah, to answer your question, the manipulation of the weather using the chemtrails, which has been going on now for about 20 years, the use of HAARP and those kinds of technologies to superheat the ionosphere and then steer weather patterns, to flood areas, to create droughts in other areas, to steer hurricanes, to actually form hurricanes. But beyond that, the ability to use extra low frequency and then other frequencies to actually manipulate the Earth's crust, which is really just a narrow crust over a molten lava mantle, so that you can push things around that way and create earthquakes or even tidal waves, possibly. We don't know the extent of what they've done in that respect. Obviously, when you look at a bigger picture of things, you have the sun's impact on our weather systems. The sun and the moon have the largest impact, but you can take on a more microcosmic level. You can manipulate those cycles from the sun and the moon and create sort of localized patterns to your advantage to use as a weapon, to use as a way of controlling, of intimidating. And we know they've done that. We have the evidence. And there's those who have done very good work in revealing that stuff and showing it. And thank God for the internet. But of course, God doesn't leave us comfortless. Our source doesn't leave us comfortless. To think that we would be at the mercy of these forces as they grow and develop their technologies and not have some kind of counterbalance to it is, being one that has little faith. Again, the radiation, it has to be addressed. It can't just be, God will provide, or the universe will take care of us, or the source will find us. All of that is true, but we have to be active in the process. We have to be, I think, in having a sense of urgency about it, because so many will suffer needlessly if we don't act. Already many have suffered. They're suffering right now in their cancer, in the cancer wards, in tens of thousands of percentage higher numbers than only years ago. It's exploding. And out of that, out of our addressing that, will come some really great, eurekas to the scientific world, to our world in general. And that's, but we have to address it. We can't ignore it. We can't say, well, that's not happening, which so many are doing. And so the lone wolves, the lone voices are going to be lonely for a while, but we're not lonely. I mean, there's, I feel like I'm in a community that's growing so fast. It's hard to keep up to. It's very hopeful.
Yes, it is. Yes. Yeah, I've been, you know, I really struggle on a daily basis to, I know there is no perfect way to approach people, how to, try to enlighten someone, awaken someone, if you want to call it. Do you have techniques or anything like that that you, you just strike up conversations and, talk to people or?
Yeah, I suppose if a characteristic of mine, that I can observe me having, is sort of like, having a global enough, awareness of things going on that I can apply that understanding to each issue that, you know, I might encounter with someone or might converse with someone about. I think if I'm whole in my approach to life, then I can meet somebody where they're at in a way that engenders wholeness, you know, that might bring wholeness to my conversation. So, you know, like warning people about, say, Fukushima, I can't go around saying, hey, you know, you need to pay attention to Fukushima. But what I can do is sort of when we're talking about our children's health, for example, how's your kids? Oh, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, boy, more so than ever, right? We have to be careful, right? Especially with all this radiation coming over from Japan. It means we got to really, really build up that immune system. Everybody knows that they have to do something about their immune system. Otherwise, they're just fodder for big pharma, right? And their drugs, which only destroys your immune system more. So everybody knows that, I mean, unless you're completely checked out, which, you know, I don't run into people like that often. When I do, I'm usually gone because there's not much you can do, with somebody that's just driven to, you know, a meaningless existence. They haven't made any choices towards something meaningful. So it's, you know, it's the whole thing about casting your pearls before swine, not to condemn them to damnation, but just to say you've got to pick your battles, right? So with people who are trying to live a meaningful life, pretty much everybody's figured out. You've got to work extra hard to build up your system, your immune system with supplementation, with, you know, making sure to choose organic foods, etc. And in that process, you're going to learn that, you know, when your body's immunity's up, you can handle things that might be in the environment, like the nuclei. Now, I still don't know enough about how the body would handle an atom of plutonium that you breathe into your lungs that gets lodged in there. Because from what I've heard, that's about it. You are kind of sentenced to death with that. But I can't believe that that would be the final say on that. And I believe that the body is an incredible system. But beyond the physical things we can do, there are the spiritual things and the actual invoking of light through any prayer system that you might, you know, have in your experience, in your tradition. We just don't exercise those traditions well enough. You know, we get distracted by our day-to-day life. I mean, I admit to that wholeheartedly that I could certainly spend more of my day with the spiritual practices that I have learned, in order to bring more light, invoke more light from those extra dimensions of consciousness. Just so, number one, my consciousness expanded in that moment to meet the challenges of life, but also to counteract the things in my body that I can do with more light. Cause you know, each and every cell and atom an electron in the body is surrounded by, as you mentioned earlier, 97% space. So what are you filling that space in, that vacuum? That's consciousness. What are you filling it with? Just ideas that are somewhat flitting, and you're just picking up like a radio antenna picks up on all the stuff that's in the mass consciousness, right? That's just floating around. Do you just like, do you find yourself hooked to, you know, the next piece of information from that website or getting something off the radio or the TV or are you going to the bar so you can just get into somebody else's life? What are you doing with that extra time? Or are you filling it with something that lets you meet the challenges with a higher frequency, a higher vibration, a higher state of consciousness, more light, in other words, more enlightenment, right? So, you know, look at the example of the one that was known as Gautama, the Buddha. He sat under the Bo tree for 40 days and nights. And what did he do? He aligned himself up in, to use, you know, a more modern concept of what he did, with the consciousness of the divine, of the higher realms, of the upper dimensions. He lined himself up with his own reality, and then he used what's known as the earth touching mudra to claim that whole reality for time and space and the physical reality that he was in that body. So that's quite a momentous thing he did. And Jesus learned from that too and did the same thing. And yet he went around sacrificing his body's comfort and for the greater good of sharing this enlightenment with everyone he could. This became his mission. It was like, you know, I'm not going to sit here and just go off into nirvana for the rest of this life. I'm going to be accountable for this. I'm going to be grateful for this experience and share it in gratitude with all of my fellow beings, those who are actually connected to you and me. We're all one. So if any part of us is kind of lacking in the enlightenment we need, what do? Well, we try to help enlighten that one. So if we go in that spirit, Stephen, to answer your question, if we go in that spirit of being an electrode of higher consciousness in every relationship, regardless of how brief, then we will be in tune with, we'll be aware of what that person might need. And it might be us that needs it, that the other person can provide. So we're always in that role that the teacher is the one who learns the most, right? Because when someone has something to learn and you can be the instrument of that teaching, well, that person will take a certain portion of that from where they're at. But you will have taken on the whole teaching and you will have become that teaching even for just that moment. Guess who's learning that teaching in greater measure? It's the teacher. So, and I'm not the teacher most of the time. I'm the one who's being taught by others. That humility is what's going to make you or allow you to become to take on the greatest wholeness that you could take. I think that psychology, those who are the most advanced in the practice of psychology, teaches us that every relationship teaches us something about ourselves. Somewhere in our folds of consciousness, we have that person in us. We have those characteristics, and we may like them or dislike them. Oftentimes, when you react to somebody viscerally, it's because you see something in them that you don't like in yourself.
That's right. That's right. If you tend to have some of these traits you're talking about, you will see somebody acting away. And I know it hits me a lot of times. I don't know. Maybe it just happens to people that are more awake than to people that are not. But I see things, and I think, man, that is just plain ignorant or stupid. And then it hits me. Well, I thought that way in the past, and I've done that way in the past too. And it's like, yes, that really is ignorant and stupid.
It is. And let that ignorance and stupidity be held apart and seen for what it is and not personalized so much. I think one thing we tend to do is personalize. Now, that isn't to ignore the fact that some people have chosen as in a self-styled enemy to become your enemy. So you see that enemy out there and you want to detach that part of them that makes them your enemy from them. You want to hold them up and hold the concept of who they really are, which they themselves are not accepting. So that takes a lot of mastery. That takes a lot of emotional mastery. It takes a lot of spiritual mastery to do that. Sometimes you don't have time, to respond like that, or at least you don't, in your current state of awareness, you don't have the time. But later on, when you reflect on that situation, you'll see, my goodness, you know, I could have handled that better. I'm amazed by a story that was shared with me once about a Japanese fellow in a train, a subway, and someone comes into the subway stinking drunk and starts to bully everyone around, and he becomes threatening, even pulls a knife. And this master, if you will, this Zen master, all of a sudden just says, "Hey, you." And the guy stops what he's doing. You know, he's bullying everybody. He's threatening people. He says, "Hey, you," just like that. And the guy stops what he's doing, turns around, and what? You know, he goes, "Hey, come here. I got something to share with you." "Well, what are you talking about?" And he just, like, nothing's happened. He just starts to converse with them and then starts to ask him questions about his own life. The guy ends up crying with his head in the lap of the master. So here was this guy who could have stabbed people to death and stolen their money. Instead, turns into a blubbering baby in the lap of the master. How did he do that? Well, he disarmed him with joy, with laughter, with love. He saw something in the man couldn't see for himself or the others being intimidated, and he related to that point in him. And you know what? We all have that capacity if we only allow ourselves to do it. It doesn't mean we're going to let the psychopaths run roughshod. Psychopaths really have very little to refer to in themselves anymore. So what we have to do with them is really let really invoke the light so that they can be taken from our midst. They really don't belong here. They don't have anything in them that can be, you know, that can be, qualified, for being here. They're just predators, parasites. Is it possible for psychopaths to be healed and so on? Yeah, I don't know. I don't have an answer to that. It probably is, but the odds are so far against it. Because, I mean, we do live in a free will universe. And when somebody's committed that far into it, their momentum is so great, it's almost impossible for them to turn it around. It's like asking, you know, something to be what it isn't. But anyway, I hope that question was answered sufficiently.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. I started to get a call there for a few seconds, and I had to respond to somebody. So I was just letting you go.
That's great.
Yeah.
No, I appreciate that.
Yeah, we've only got about 7 minutes left. I thought maybe we would go on a different direction and talk about Franz a little bit.
All right.
Is that okay?
Yeah, sure. What are you wondering about?
Did you have an awakening, or were you always awake, or?
Well, you know, I've given that some thought, and that's a really, you know, it's a really good question that can't be, you know, lightly answered. I've had some awakenings, through my life, but I recognize them as, waypoints along the path of, greater love, greater appreciation, greater gratitude, greater wholeness. I feel like I've been doing this forever. when I was born, I remember having access to things that, then, you know, you didn't have anymore after you grew up a little bit and were put into the matrix. So that childlike innocence, that ability to travel universe, to interact with, beings on other dimensions, you know, life forms or forms of life, if you will, or forms of consciousness. you know, we have all our fairy tales that we call fairy tales, but they're more real than what our parents tell us is real and our teachers tell us is real. They really are. They're timeless. They're timeless forms of life. They don't come to an end. That part of it, the time and space part, comes to an end. So as a child, now, I remember just interacting with them as if it was normal, natural, because I hadn't been corrupted yet. And that's not to blame anyone, because, you know, we all come in with a certain amount of karma that we made from before. So we have to live through that. We have to balance that out. And so there's been some good moments of, you know, when I was going through high school, you know, music was a great love for me. I played the trumpet, but I gave it up because I found myself getting attracted to kind of a lower form of music that kept dragging my energies down and would have dragged me into a very, I don't know, lifestyle without a lot of meaning, you know? So I gave that up, and I wish I had stuck with it from more of a, you know, from more of the classical music, because that does raise consciousness. When you're in a symphony orchestra and you play Beethoven or Mozart, your consciousness goes into the higher realms. That music is designed to do that. So I kind of wish I had stuck to that. And that's okay. It's all part of the learning. But I found myself through my teens needing to find the answers. Like, what am I doing here? And I was attracted. I was very eclectic. I was fortunate to have parents who came from rather eclectic backgrounds themselves, although my mom's mother was a very devoted Roman Catholic, did the rosary every day and so on. And I'm grateful for that because I truly believe in the power of that. That's an incredibly powerful prayer. And there are many traditions from all the religions that are very powerful, and they bring great light to those who practice them and to their families. And I believe that my grandmother's practices helped me to come into this lifetime with at least a certain amount of protection. And, but my mom had a negative experience with being educated by the nuns in Montreal, Quebec, Canada, and, sort of eschewed that whole thing because it just seemed corrupt and hypocritical to her. But she's always had a strong, you know, she's always had a great deal of, appreciation of some of the Native American practices, in her family. There were some, there's Native American blood. I think her mother's mother or grandmother, was married to one of the chiefs in their village, near their village. And then also on her father's side. So there's blood of a couple tribes, in my mom. And she really related to their Native spirituality, their ability to see the spiritual through nature. And so she gave me that. My father was more of an intellectual, but he was a very open-minded one and very eclectic in many ways, sort of agnostic, if you will. So it kept me open to all possibilities. And so it allowed me to find the golden mean in all paths. There is no one path for anyone, for everyone. There is a path that is good for you to take as you would choose in this life. And then let that path be your guide until it's not anymore. You might find your guru in this life, and everybody does, your teacher, your mentor. Everyone should have a guru, because there are those who have gone before us. And part of their growth is to be a mentor to you. So you can't reject that process. There is hierarchy. People want to eschew hierarchy. But that's not the way the universe works. Just because hierarchy's been corrupted in our current, you know, classroom experience doesn't mean you throw it out. It's like throwing out the baby with the bathwater. It's like saying religion is bad. It's the source of all evil. It's like saying money is the source of all evil. It's like saying anything is, no, everything has its purpose, but anything can be corrupted. So evil is like the opposite of what's good about something. And it doesn't mean you throw that thing out because it's been corrupted. People think that government is evil. No way. So thank you, Stephen. It's been great.
Yes. Thank you, Franz.
It's gone by really fast.
Yes, it has. The 2 hours. I want to say everyone at Revolution Radio, thank you very much. And I'll see you next Sunday. I'm Stephen Roberts. This is Cancel the Cabal. Goodbye, everyone. All right, welcome back, everyone, on Revolution Radio. I'm Stephen Robertson. Me and Franz Klaus decided to come back. He wanted to continue on some more, and I can do a little bit more. I can do about 30 minutes more. Is that okay with you, Franz?
Yeah, I know we actually missed something. It's very, very important, and some of my buddies online have reminded me how important a tool of control, the whole economic system, the whole false currency system, the central banking, the usury. We could touch on that and how it relates to, you know, our being able to, you know, win back our sovereignty from that system of control. Certainly, I'd love to talk about that. That brings us back down to earth. You know, I got way out there with the multidimensional spiritual subject, which is where I'm oriented to. I'm just naturally oriented to that for one reason or another. I think it's because as the adage goes, I'm an old soul. So I've sort of had it and are looking for the ticket home. The ticket home, though, isn't something you go and pay good money for. You earn it with the sweat of your brow. You balance your karma. You share. You be the bodhisattva. You be the Christ in action yourself. And that's in all walks of life. I can walk into a bank and talk to a banker about their system of currency and hopefully wake him up to the fraud he's living under, right?
Say, Franz, I need to interrupt your thoughts there just for a minute. I need to announce that, everybody that can, please do go hit the donate button. And Hawk says today with a $25 donation, you get a nice looking hunting knife.
Wow.
Yeah. So we all live on donations. So
I could use a nice sharp knife.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right, go ahead and continue. For a $25 donation, you get a nice knife.
Well, that's great. And thanks to who, did you say?
Hawk at Revolution Radio.
Hawk, thanks, man. That's a great, great offer. And I invite everyone, encourage everyone, because, I mean, how else do we have a platform to talk about these issues if we're not choosing to spend our money in that direction? We have to choose it wisely. And you know, money is a temporary store of wealth, value. It's a means of exchange. Even a gold coin has a temporary store of value until you've extinguished your debt with the other party within a transaction by offering him the gold coin in exchange for his goods or services. And that's what the precious metals are meant to do. Why the founders knew that the Constitution, that it should be encoded in the Constitution that our money, our currency, should be drafted by Congress, issued by Congress through the Treasury, with gold and silver coins, and even copper and other metals in a tiered system of value, where you can extinguish your debt with the other party with that money. You see, that's what we do instead is we have debt notes issued by the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve note is not money. It's a debt note. It's more debt. And the debt is on the chattel that is the American people in their mercantilist system, which was enshrined by the Act of 1871 that incorporated the United States and put a false overlay on the free market that we had under the small case United States of America and that original Constitution. So there's a false Constitution. There are things that are told to us that we supposedly ratified that we never ratified, including the tax, the income tax. So we have these things going on that are just a counterfeit of their original. And it's not that big a deal for us to get the original back. We simply need to talk about it with each other. We need to organize ourselves. We need to take politics local again. All politics are local. The idea that Washington, D.C. should tell us how to run our affairs in our local school district, for example, or local police, forces or anything we do. The strings have been tied in so that we're all centrally controlled by the system, which is false. And you can look at the Bank of North Dakota for a way for what they've done to create a state bank. We need public banks. I think I agree with that. But what we need is to get Congress back issuing money. And we have a corrupt Congress. There's no way. I mean, you can't take these steps without baby steps first. How do you replace a Congress, 535 men and women, most of whom are bought off by the beast, by the
You put them in jail. You put them in jail.
Yeah.
And also got to interrupt your thoughts one more time again.
I didn't
specify. That's for the Revolution Radio people. That's a $25 U.S. only donation.
U.S. only? Okay.
U.S. only donation.
So listeners in Russia can't do it?
Obviously not.
No. But U.S. listeners, go buy your knife, even if you already have a knife. This is probably a pretty nice knife, I would guess.
It is. It's a hunting knife.
Yeah.
It's probably a buck knife, but I'm not sure.
Yeah. Well, you know, you can't have too many of those. My daughter's boyfriend has a whole collection of them. Very impressive. And he's only 16. He's already got a pretty impressive collection of knives and swords. So don't get cute with this guy. So anyway, being defended, well defended, is part of what it means to be a warrior on the path, right? The samurai knows that the power he wields with his sword in his craft is one that he is not going to abuse if he hopes to have it for bringing peace and justice to his world. So the true samurai doesn't ever use his sword unless it's to defend life, because you know he's living in the real world. There are real world consequences to not paying attention to the enemy and what he might throw at you. And that includes what we do with our wealth. So if you're putting money in a big bank who can just like overnight declare a bank holiday and devalue what you have there by 50%, like they've done in other places, if you don't think that can happen here, you are whistling past the graveyard. You know, you're just not paying attention. So you don't keep your money in the big banks. You don't keep your money in empty Federal Reserve notes that are currently being devalued, by design. That's the whole point. You know, the Federal Reserve Act allowed them to start issuing these phony reserve note debts on us, devaluing the dollar now by 98%, whatever. Some say 95, some say 99, some say 97. It's a lot. It's not worth much compared to then. Remember, I mean, you know, everybody marvels at the fact that somebody could go into a grocery store in 1912 and buy, you know, like the week's groceries with a couple of bucks or $5. So what do we spend now on groceries? And it's not that simple an equation, of course, because technology allows us to purchase stuff, you know, even for the fiat dollars we use now at relatively low. I mean, if you calculate the difference of value, some of the purchases we make are for just pennies, if you're using a 1912 dollar. But that's because of technology and because of economies of scale that have been designed into industry in a way that has just far exceeded anyone's expectation. And even that has been curtailed by the psychopaths. They've curtailed the amount of ingenuity, the amount of technological advance we could have had without them. Without their controls, the monopolists, the JP Morgans, the ones who shut down Tesla and his technology. Now, we should all be powering our houses with free energy. Our cars should be levitating. Okay. That's what they had in Atlantis. And we should have that Atlantis come again today. Tesla gave us all of that. It's all very well documented. If people listening to the show haven't done that research, haven't seen that, it's all over the internet. You're just not paying attention, but I'm sure you have. I'm guessing that 99.9% of the people listening know exactly what I'm talking about. So, you know, here we are. We understand all this, and yet we're hamstrung, or we got our hands tied behind our back to make this happen. Well, that's temporary because they can't hold us down. It's not going to happen. Stephen, what's next in your – I don't want to miss any kind of juncture we have here.
Well, I don't know. I only wanted to go about another 10 minutes or so, but did you actually expand on what we were talking about before the end of the second hour? Or?
Oh, you know, going back to that, you know, I was getting into the idea that we have our elder brothers and sisters to help us. So to think that we're comfortless with all these psychopaths around us is is ye of little faith. You never think that. And most people I'm talking to here know that. But it's like we can forget it. I find myself going, my God, this is hopeless. I do find myself doing that. But in the end, man, you've got to get on your knees. You've got to get on your knees and understand that you're just one small piece of the big puzzle and that you fit in that hierarchy at a certain place. There are those who are following you. There are those who you are following. Put yourself in your rightful place and ask for the help you need to grow where you need to and to go where you need to go in consciousness and, of course, in your influence on your circle. So don't think you can do this on your own. Don't do the lone wolf thing. But even if you don't go out much, you don't party much, you don't associate with a whole lot of people, there's a limitless community of called out ones, those who have chosen and been called to step forward and swing that sword of reality. What does sword mean? Sword is the sacred word, sword. That is the sword we wield and has more power than anything else that your imagination can conceive. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The sacred word. You have that power. Use it. So we all have our traditions we've come from to leverage that power in spoken word, in chants. And that is so powerful. It's more powerful than we even allow. And the more of us exercising it means that their days are numbered. And I think they are. There's enough of us exercising that their days are numbered. So if you wonder what you're going to do, my vote doesn't count. You know, my letters to my congressman don't count. When I try to organize something, it always gets corrupted. Somebody steps in and corrupts it on me. You know, I mean, one can become defeatist, but you keep putting one foot in front of the other. Remember that movie, Rob Roy, where the guy is beating his ass with a sword, and he just grabs the sword with his bare hand and defeats him. So what he does is he reaches deep within himself to that eternal spirit, the conqueror, and just ignoring all of the outer things that would suggest to him that he's a loser, that he's going to lose this fight, and is able to conquer the enemy, who is really nobody, but just appears to be somebody who's been trained better with the sword and so on and so forth. So, yeah, we're on their playing field, but we're not. We have to realize that we're taking a fight to them, but not on their playing field, not on their terms. And they're the ones who took the fight to us. Just like in the revolution, it was the British firing on the Sons of Liberty first. They drew first blood, and then it was on. Well, the fallen ones have drawn first blood. It's on. We're taking the fight to them. And we don't fight on their terms. We do like the Revolutionary Army did. We fight the guerrilla war. We fight it from another platform, the one that gives us the victory, that lets us stay true to ourselves. You know, the British, all they could do, and the Hessians, all they could do is march in formation. And they were, you know, now the Hessians learned, and they became a more formidable foe. Still, the Revolutionary Army had the truth, the light on their side, which is why they won. And they were unconventional because they're the called out ones. They're the oddballs. I'm just going on and on here, Steve.
Stop no, that's okay. Yep. That's okay. I didn't want to interrupt you, but, I've got a comment and there is a question from, one of my chat rooms, the video chat room. But my comment is, the American money has been devalued. Like you said, depends on who you talk to, anywhere between 95 and 98%. And just millions of people are brainwashed into believing that, it's just the evil corporations and the evil people that own small businesses are just gouging people and they're just raising their prices, just because they're, greedy and evil, and it's the capitalist against the little guy argument there. And what they really don't realize is the devaluation is the answer to the question, and not the evil corporation.
Right. Well, the manipulators of reality are going to corrupt every aspect of our experience, including the businessman. They're going to corrupt that. They're going to monopolize it, which is what they've done. They're going to monopolize. There isn't a free market. There are, in local areas, free markets where we still trade with each other on a free market basis, where independent small businesses offer their wares and their services, you know, in the local market, competing with others in a local market, bringing a better service than the next guy, and therefore able to maybe charge a higher price for their services because they offer a better service. All of that continues to operate because of how strong and powerful the Constitution was, the idea of liberty. But In the macroeconomic sense, there's been a monopolization of industry, of energy, of medicine, of food, of agriculture, and, you know, wherever you look, of course, of finance, which is a completely false system. And so the manipulators have corrupted the different ways that people interact with each other. They've corrupted those systems. They've corrupted those societies. They've taken, for example, Freemasonry, which is built on the logos, on the divine principles that go back centuries and eons. And they've insinuated themselves into that order and corrupted the higher levels to such a degree that they're practicing Luciferians. They're of the devil. They're the father of lies and all that. But not because the original principles of Freemasonry were evil, but because they have been turned into principles that can be exercised in what would be known as black magic. So everything, the movies could be done to bring great, inspiring messages to us, but instead they're corrupted to bring images and ideas of corruption. So, you know, they've insinuated themselves. Why? Because we believe their lies. So the idea that, sure, setting up the liberals versus the conservatives, the free market, or let's say the capitalist versus the communist, that's exactly what they do. That's called the Hegelian dialectic, or at least the philosophy was coded by Hegel in that concept of the dialectic. What it is a Buddhist concept of duality. And he has the Buddha concept of duality actually treats that whole idea of duality much, much better, but still Hegel's contribution is very good for the Western mind to be able to grasp how they do this. So they pit one side against the other and they fund both sides. And in many ways, in many cases, it's more than one side. It's many sides. And they have their money invested in all parties and keep them artificially pitted against each other. And they use false flags to do that. They use innuendo, and they'll even assassinate people if they're going to blow their jig.
Bankers never lose, do they?
Well, I mean, they're losers from the get-go. They are the cosmic losers, but the way they win is by engaging mankind in tribal psychology, in keeping them distracted, keeping them tempted by the baubles of the world. So it's up to mankind to choose to take a higher path in every aspect of their life. And when it comes to your child having cancer and leukemia, it gets really real. It's not just a concept anymore.
Yes,
it does.
It's
not just, oh, yeah, I'm a new age. I'm kind of into this new age thing now. It's not this trendy thing you're into anymore. When your kid's got leukemia and is having to get a marrow transplant, it becomes really real.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. Yep. And I just want to get to that question in the chat, and then we do need to get out of here about 5 minutes from now. But the question is the banking system crisis, usury leading to insolvency, and how will it end? When and why?
Yeah, you know, the word insolvency has a word in it, solvent, which has in it the sovereign man. It will end when each and enough individuals take their sovereignty back in enough measure. So what is sovereignty? You know, I mean, people hear that word and they think it's all connected with some fundamentalist concept, you know, that is totalitarian in nature. Nothing could be further from the truth. The founders knew what a sovereignty what sovereignty meant. It means that you are free to rule your life as you see fit, to have freedom of religion, freedom of speech, freedom of... So to the extent that people give those freedoms up, let others dictate for them how they should have that, their wealth, how much taxes they should pay. Who the heck said anybody could take from me forcefully a portion of my income that I've rightfully earned? Obviously, there are a lot of things that have to be reversed, but we can do little things within our communities. We can gather in our groups to decide to have local economies that are totally outside of the Federal Reserve economy, the false economy, the monopoly economy, their monopoly money. We can do that. Look at what Bitcoin's doing. Look what the cryptocurrencies are doing, and look at what people who understand the value of precious metals, those who have stacked their silver and their gold and their copper and their platinum, and their, so these are people who understand that they don't have to be limited by the false economy and the false currencies. They do the little things. They take their money out of the big banks. They don't let themselves be vulnerable to whatever they would do. They don't get loans. They pay as they go. I mean, it sounds crazy, but you don't get a mortgage. I do. I have one, but it's too late for me, on that score. I know looking back, I could have done it differently. I wish I had, but I'll get to that point. I will. And so I'm in control. I know that I've made some mistakes along this path of learning, but I'm in control. The first thing is you educate yourself. You don't let yourself be indoctrinated. You educate yourself. You think for yourself critically. You use, you mentioned the trivium and the quadrivium earlier. Google those terms. Find out what the heck they mean. The young man, Chris Duane, has done a great job with his series, Chris Duane on the trivium and so many other things, so many factors of control that you take back for yourself. Take your control back.
Educate Jan Irvin yourself. Too.
Yep.
Jan Irvin, do you know of him?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Yeah. There's so many sources we can go to, but people don't even lift a finger. They're too busy to see what their sports teams are doing. They want to be able to go into work the next day, tomorrow, and look like a big man talking about the sports teams and knowing all the details about that soap opera. Isn't that ridiculous?
Oh, it absolutely is. Yeah, and I think that's a pretty good note to end on. I have definitely got to get you back on again.
Let's talk about it, Steve. Let's do it again.
Yeah. One of my other networks. We are all into personal responsibility, sovereignty, and natural law, commons law, whatever you want to call it. God's mm-hmm. law, no harm, no foul. Mm-hmm. We are all into that. That's our big thing. So I really appreciate you coming on today. And we even did an extra 27 some odd minutes or so.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it. Yeah. So I want to sign off one more time at Revolution Radio. Thank everybody for staying tuned. And we'll see everybody next Sunday. Different guest, same show, same station. Please go hit that donate button. Today, I think today only, $25 U.S. only will get you a nice shiny hunting knife from Hawk. So everybody go hit that donate button. Thanks again. Revolution Radio. I'm Stephen Roberts. This is Cancel the Cabal. Signing off again. I got to hit my other broadcast. And I'm officially off the air, Franz. I've got some company that came up. Otherwise, I would have sat here and did another 30 minutes with you.
Oh, well, appreciate that. And please enjoy yourself with your company. Thank you. That was a great interview, Steve. I enjoyed it a great deal. I couldn't think of a better host to sort of get my feet wet again in this. And
yeah.
Thank you. I just can't thank you enough. It's a great joy.
Well, like I told you, I think in the chat, it's not about me. It's about somebody's information, Yeah. A lot of times, I'll just sit there and mute and listen and wait for a chance to ask something. I don't really care to interrupt, but,
there's different ways to do it,
Yes, there is,
You listen to Alex Jones and he's in every conversation.
Yeah.
He's in there to steer it, to direct it, to get, And then there's you on the other side of the scale. And I don't fault either one of you. You're both doing it your way. I love Liz and Alex. Alex is a brilliant guy, but your shows are cool because you get to really hear what the other person's wanting to talk about. And so, well done. You do a good job and you have a great radio voice.
Oh, thank you.
Yep.
Okay. So take care and have a good day.
Well, you too, Steve. Let's do it again.
I'll give you a message and tell you all kinds of times and dates and that. And
yeah.
Let you pick and choose.
Yeah.
The other network I want to introduce you to, my shows are on Wednesday and Friday, at 7 p.m. Eastern.
Okay.
If that'll be okay with you.
Wednesday might, both of those nights might work, and then other cases they might not. So we have to call it on a week to week basis.
Sure.
Let's just stay in touch. And I'm open to any of those times.
Okay.
If I have it available to me. I just love doing it. It was a great experience. Be glad to talk on other subjects, maybe study up on them so there's more specifics going on, but always with kind of the overall theme that we're taking our control back spiritually, mentally, intellectually.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
So have a good day.
All right.
I need to go visit.
All right. Have fun, man. Have a good day.
Goodbye.
Bye.